My name is David Guffey. I'm a priest of the Congregation of Holy Cross. I live in residence here, and I'm really happy to be with you. I think everybody else is at Congress or recovering from the Religious Education Congress. How many people spent any time at the Religious Education Congress this year? A few. It's this great event. It's held down in Anaheim. I think there's between 37 and 45,000 people who get together, and there's talks and events and music and all sorts of things. I'm from the Midwest, and it reminds me of a big county fair. All they need is animal shows and it'd be complete. There were no cows, a little bull, no cows, so that's the difference. And lots of great talks. I really go online if you want to hear some of the things that were there, and they're really some of the great thinkers and the great people who imagine a future of our church and life in the church were there, and it was really amazing. Good to come back to that and come back and be here in this community. I get to meet so many wonderful people. It's one of the great things I really love about my life. And there was an occasion where I was sitting at dinner. Actually, we had eaten dinner, and it was we were kind of winding down. And we were at a table with a lot of people, but I struck up a conversation with the man sitting next to me. And the man sitting next to me told me the story of his family. He had five children, and he and his wife were from New Jersey. And they had had three small children. This would have been in the late 60s, early 70s. They had three small children, and they wanted a big family. He had a job with an oil company, and he was in research and exploration and development, and he was traveling all over the world doing these really exciting things to try to find new oil reserves. And it was really stimulating to him intellectually and on all sorts of ways. And they were moving. They had moved. They'd spent some time in Europe, and they had spent some time in Texas, and they had been moving around a lot because it was the nature of the position. They got pregnant again with their fourth child, and they were happy about it. But a couple of months into the pregnancy, they started to have concerns about the child. And they found out that the child had a form of cerebral palsy. And this was devastating news to the parents. And the doctors told them that when the child is born, it's very likely that the child will not have a normal life. And they said it's very likely that the child will never be able to walk and won't be able to care for himself. And they said, well, what can we do? And the doctor said, well, there's really nothing, no guarantees. He said the only thing that seems to be helping is that there's some people who have developed some physical therapy strategies, but you would have to do them for several hours a day. And by several hours, I mean 4 to 5 hours a day of physical therapy exercises with the child. They had three small children. They were all under six at the time. And so the mother, I mean, she could barely keep up. I mean, imagine three small children. These are my nieces and nephews. I'm tired after a half hour when I'm around them. The mother was really stretched. And they were scheduled for another move because he was moving up in the company and doing all these things. And it seemed what they came up with is the only way that this could happen was if the father did the physical therapy with the child. And so the father would have to spend 4 to 5 hours a day, but he was already working 16 to 18 hours a day. He thought that was the way he was going to be a good father. He really thought that the way that he would be a good father is that he would earn a lot of money, provide opportunities for his children, that he would rise in the company, that they would experience different cultures and places, and they really had a vision of how they could make a life for their children in this way. But that wasn't going to work. And so they talked with the people at the company that he worked for, and in order for him to stay in the same place, they wanted to stay close to a certain set of doctors. They were not going to be able to move around so much anymore. And in order for him to be able to come home at a regular hour, go to work at a regular hour, come home at a regular hour, he was going to have to take a significant demotion. He said it was embarrassing. It was hard for me to think of kind of going that far back in the company and step down that much. He said, but we talked about it and we did it. And the child was born and it was really hard. And we did these physical therapy exercises. And you'd move his leg and stretch and move and stretch and move and stretch and move. And the child grew. And they did that for years. They had one more child after that child as well. And he said, I didn't move up as much in the company, but I still work for the same company and still do fairly well. And he kind of stopped for a second, and we just kind of looked out at the crowd. And he looked like a man so satisfied, because what we were looking at was his son, the one that would never walk, dancing at his wedding. The son graduated from the University of Notre Dame. The son did a year of postgraduate volunteer service with the poor at a place that I worked at in Phoenix, and I presided at the wedding. And that morning, that boy that was never supposed to walk or be able to care for himself had walked down the aisle with a spouse and was dancing at his wedding. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Robert and his wife had to let some things die. They just had to let go of what they thought their life, their career, their family was going to be. But in doing that, they opened up so many other possibilities. And in doing that, they put aside some worldly gain. But the look of satisfaction in their faces that at that moment and throughout the whole weekend was one of people who had touched eternal life, of people who had touched the things that were most essential about life and connected with the deepest and most important things about what it is to live. I think we all come to those moments. I was debating before I came down here which story I was going to tell, because I had about six of them. If I were another preacher, I would tell all six, but I'm not going to do that. Because I think in everyone's life, we have to let go of what we had planned, let go of what we had expected, let go of even something that it could be considered good, in order to be fully present to the realities and demands of the thing that's before us, the thing of love, the thing of truth, the thing of beauty that's before us. Jesus says that if you love your life in this world, you will lose it. And if you hate your life in this world, you will have it to eternal life. And it's really important to understand what he means by world. By world, John doesn't mean that just like this life or human life or life on earth. When John uses the word world, it's almost like he's using the word system. The pattern of what's important to the system of the culture, the prevailing norms, the prevailing values, the prevailing systems of reward and punishment, the prevailing things that drive society and drive a culture. And when the world will not understand things of eternity all the time. And so what John is saying, if you love your life in the system, if you love your life in the system of the way things are, you're going to lose it. But if you hate your life in the system, if you can let go of your life within the world, within the system, then you'll find it. We're called to discern what of our life, and especially in those moments when we really have to decide what are the things that are going to lead us towards eternal life? What are the things that are going to lead us toward the things that are most eternally important? Truth, beauty, goodness, love, justice, compassion. And what are the things that are going to lead us in other directions? And then let go of them. It's the great challenge of every life at some point. Now, there's a time to fight, and there's a time to persist forward. There's a time to try to find other solutions. But there does come a time when you have to close a door, cross a bridge, when you have to make a decision and let something die, that something else may live. May we have the grace to recognize those moments, and may we have the grace to do that, have the grace to let things be so that we can move forward and truly touch eternal life. That is, not just the things that are in heaven beyond when we die, but eternal life in terms of the things and the moments when we are touching something so beautiful and wonderful and important that it's important now and into eternity, things of love and truth and beauty and goodness.